Yes, folks, that was Genesis with a little bit of Abacab for you. Give me some time to get my bearings in order. But yes. So as I said, before we get to some of the aforementioned topics, Science Per Hour, we like to talk about a little bit of national news, a little bit of, you know, community news, kind of bring it all one, bring it all together. And first, I guess it's important to talk about the big national news that's going on. The big scandal trifecta, if you will, going on with the current administration, President Obama. If you have not known, or if you don't know, last week was pretty, I guess some people would call it explosive. I would say it's definitely pretty controversial. Three somewhat scandals, somewhat converging all at the same time. So what happened, I guess the three big scandals that are going on facing the Obama administration is continued investigation and ongoing questioning about the Benghazi attacks that happened last year in Libya on September 11th, which the Senate and committees have been asking the President, Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State, to kind of talk about what's been going on. There's obviously been having committees and investigations upon that front. Not only has that's been going on, two other scandals have just recently surfaced. One of them, the second one, is the improper and somewhat aggressive actions by the head of the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, where supposedly members of the IRS scrutinize and checked disproportionately, or at least singled out a lot of Tea Party, which is what the term they used, and conservative organizations when it went through their background checks, or not their background checks, but their IRS, their tax records and whatnot. So a lot of improprieties being seen there, especially when there's a liberal in office, for the IRS to be even somewhat looking at or searching out, targeting specific organizations because of their conservative leanings. Obviously, a lot of trouble on the president's hands and the IRS. And the third of these scandals recently is the Justice Department's seizure of the phone records of the Associated Press, which is something that it very much goes McCarthy-esque or very censorship-esque type of tinge to it as well. So what's kind of happened over the last week as damage control upon a lot of these fronts is the White House, when it came to the Benghazi attack, they released a bunch of pages, hundreds of pages of emails relating to the Benghazi attack, relating to the IRS. Obama announced the resignation of the acting IRS director, and as he said, quote, pledged further action to correct the abuses. And finally, Attorney General Eric Holder appeared on Capitol Hill to defend the agency, defend the Justice Department, saying that the conduct was unacceptable, that of going into the AP's, you know, records, and what ended up happening with the AP was the Justice Department went, got the contact information of 100 of the sources and reporters for the AP. And usually when this happens, the United States government gives notice to the news outlet, and this just wasn't the case. This just didn't happen. They just dumped the records, got the records, and obviously very big news. And actually, it's led to Obama, obviously, last week, talking more about having more defensive shield laws for the media, for the press, to allow them to, you know, have more rights and definitely not feel as infringed upon. What's interesting, though, is, you know, why a lot of this information is being harped upon by the conservative media, you know, Washington Post, Fox News especially, and also it's still a very big controversy, so many outlets like CNN are reporting this. But it's actually interesting to see that, according to the CNN ORC International poll, Obama's approval ratings have not been hurt by this. I'm taking this from the Huffington Post, but they aggregated it from CNN, so little disclaimer. The CNN and ORC International found that 53% of Americans approve of the job Obama's doing, while 45% disapprove. This number remains virtually unchanged from polls taken from the scandal before the scandal hit. And I think it's very interesting. it's either one of two things. Either people don't really know what's been going on, which is understandable. I mean, you know, Benghazi probably people have known, but definitely the IRS and AP scandals are relatively new. So that could be the case. Or people just don't care, which would also be very interesting as well. Or they don't care as much to blame Obama specifically, to say that it is his fault. They probably don't agree with, probably not necessarily like in the Justice Department per se, but definitely the Obama isn't specifically being affected by this. The CNN poll also found that 71% of Americans believe the actions of the IRS employees who targeted the Tea Party groups were unacceptable. However, 6 in 10 respondents said they trusted the president's statement on the issue. So definitely it's starting to see as if there's a difference between how they view the president's job and that of the specific actors in that case. So good news for the president. Good news for the president. But it'll be very interesting to see how these scandals play out, all of which, especially these two recent ones, are, you know, pretty big. They go right to, especially the AP one, right at the First Amendment, you know, freedom of press, and then to have, to then look at the IRS looking at specific conservative organizations and groups is also a big issue as well. So it'll be interesting, but definitely wanted to cover that a little bit and talk about that and kind of look at, definitely it's going to be something talked about by the political pundits for the next few weeks, especially as more information comes and more action is done upon those regards. So that's a little bit of national news to kind of talk about. Now we're going to, me and Greg, actually, I can actually say this is a me and Greg. We are actually, this segment is us continuing our conversation about summer movies. Just not only talking about what we've seen, but also movies that we're interested in. Things that we are very excited to see, very excited to hear more about. I think these are definitely going to be the movies that everybody's looking forward to, and we kind of give our little take on it. So this is me and Greg continuing our segment from last week on summer movies.
Last time we talked about an intro to summer movies.
I know, I kind of tried to jump the gun a little bit, trying to talk about all the movies at the end of the hour.
Yep.
I'm excited.
That would have been a lot of movies and not a lot of time.
Not at all.
So we're going to backtrack a little bit, but also future track, because these mostly haven't come out yet.
Exactly.
But we will start with one that did come out, which is The Great Gatsby.
Oh my gosh, does that have anything to do with the book made by F. Scott Fitzgerald?
It does. It was based on it. It was directed by Baz Luhrmann.
Oh snap, Baz Luhrmann, the man who also created Moulin Rouge?
That is correct, and Romeo plus Juliet.
Not Anne, folks, that is a very big distinction.
No. But The Great Gatsby, I particularly wasn't looking forward to it because I thought it looked a little over the top, a little extravagant, a little unnecessary.
Well, and you think of it this way. How could one of the great American novels of our time and Jay-Z come together? On paper, it doesn't seem like it's going to go like peanut butter and jelly.
Right. And they did some interesting things with the score. It was mostly comprised of, of course, newer artists, which is anachronistic for the setting in 1920s America. And the other part of that was just some of the songs were covers. There were a few originals. There was a Lana Del Rey song that's repeated and integrated into the score, which was done pretty effectively. And I think overall, the music wasn't a hindrance. It fit. I mean, it already was sort of just such a fantastical look at the world. Everything was almost fluorescently bright. Maybe not in a neon sign effect, but just in the brightness was turned up.
But I think that
saturation, keyword.
And I think that is very typical of films by Baz Luhrmann. I mean, it always has that colorful, sometimes kooky, but definitely bright and out of this world type of feel. It's very big, it's very eloquent, it's very pretty, and it's also just kind of puts you in this very whimsical like nature. So it makes sense that taking The Great Gatsby, which is very much about opulence and
yes.
and this very high lifestyle where
yes.
anything really is possible, it makes sense to kind of that route.
And one of the best moments in the film actually did not use an original song made in the last decade or so, but, and I don't feel that this is a spoiler, but when you first meet Gatsby in his home, you get the swelling moment of Rhapsody in Blue.
Wow.
Yes.
That's crazy.
And when you first see his face and there's fireworks going off, it's an amazing scene. And would that have been any better if they were playing Thrift Shop right then? Perhaps not. I mean, it was.
Are you spoiling that Thrift Shop is not in the movie?
It's not in the movie, folks.
Oh no!
Sorry,
Macklemore. All the tears.
But
no, I think you're right. I'm just trying to imagine that in my mind, and I can't wait to see that.
It's cool, and I'd recommend it if you're interested in any way. I wouldn't be forcing anyone to go to the film if they're not inclined to see a Great American Novel put on screen.
Well, my question was...
Oh, you had a question?
I had a question for you.
Yeah.
Which one's better, book or the movie?
Ooh, book or the movie.
Classic
book.
American novel that every high schooler has to read.
Yes.
Or Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, the book is still better. Part of what I thought about after seeing it was it's tough to put one of these timeless novels to film because it's immediately going to be dated. Whereas the book sort of lives on, and even though it has a set time period, you still sort of imagine and contextualize it in the scope of what you're familiar with. You know, perhaps they're not using cellular telephones or some such, but the themes are so applicable to life today that it's tough to have it be in the way that the Robert Redford version is perhaps seen as dated today, which is for a number of reasons, not only because it's the picture quality might be not as good. It's not in 3D. I actually didn't see this one in 3D.
I don't think this movie should have been made in 3D, but okay.
Right. I thought that was a rather interesting choice that originally made me not excited about this production.
Again, folks,
honestly,
this is Baz Luhrmann and he likes to do things big.
Yeah, but I think that in thinking that same way, that maybe the last film version perhaps won't have the longevity because it looks a little dated. Perhaps Baz Luhrmann is thinking that his will perhaps fend off a remake until the next big thing in film, you know, formalistically is introduced to have to necessitate another
Like using,
sort of.
Yes, like maybe new advancements, like having
smell-o-vision,
or having actual actors perform said movie in front of you on the live.
Is that,
wait,
are you subverting this?
I was, the history of entertainment.
Here?
I was making a commentary on theater.
Yes, you were.
Yes, jokes, but yes,
I think that it's not earth-shattering if this movie isn't perceived as great or good. It's the same way in which I mentioned last week about the interpretations that the directors of the Iron Man films have taken in adapting from a comic book. Comic book fans of the comic book will be upset that things aren't drawn to the letter. However, I think that the primary creative force, be it the director or the producers, have some say in that being their version of the story. And I think that there's a certain degree where the movie is the movie version, and it's sort of like the visual that exists of this given media.
But I do have a question, yeah. and you know, it makes me think back to whenever I see great American novels be turned into films.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. Let's look at To Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, it is a movie based on Harper Lee's book, which has its own level of, it has in and of itself become an American classic as well.
You're right.
And Gregory Peck does an amazing job in it, and really, there's defining scenes, like the courtroom scene, where we read in the book, it's, you know, you think, how are they going to make this as emotional or as drawing as Harper Lee does in this film? And in fact, some argue it's one of the greatest scenes in cinema. So
right.
There are some situations where that is the case. So I wonder maybe why will this film not, probably not, I don't want to say definitely not, maybe isn't on that same level as a, I guess, what's the thing that makes a movie become as successful or as historic as the book that it's based on?
Right.
In your opinion.
I think you're using the just greatest example of, you know,
I mean,
highest rated movie, you know, combined with such a classic canonical book in American literature. So I think that given the sort of drama that it has, and obviously the classic performances that it had from Gregory Peck and others, it just came together. I don't think that that will really just happen again.
And I can understand that. For instance, J.D. Salinger, for the longest of time, refused a movie adaptation of Catcher in the Rye to be made, and studios pursued him for years because they thought this would make a great film, but he felt very strongly that his work should be held upon its own, and felt that having a movie wouldn't do any positive to it. It wouldn't, you know, respect that vision. And it's very understandable. I mean, think about, you know, having a younger Leonardo DiCaprio, for instance, play the main character, have a Marlon Brando type character, or even one of the biggest ones is, I can't remember his name, but James Dean playing that character. I mean, there are a lot of actors who could potentially play that role wonderfully, but looking at it now, obviously, having it be made, I can understand that opinion that maybe it wouldn't be as good, and maybe there shouldn't be a Catcher in the Rye movie.
Sure, and there's something noble to his holding out on that money that was there. But even when you think about the greatest novels that we consider to be great in the English language, Moby Dick, no totemic film version, Huckleberry Finn, no, right?
I don't think so. I would like to say for those, maybe there were like maybe black and white type of things.
Well, there have been films made of, certainly Moby Dick has had
But now, but you're right, nothing like elaborate, like especially in the last 25, 30 years.
Nothing that stands out as being the film that To Kill a Mockingbird is.
I agree.
Just can be seen as a great film and not just a great adaptation, you know, not any special category, no qualifications.
See, now I'm thinking of all the books I read in high school, and I'm going through the list, and I agree. I mean,
but really, none of Hemingway's novels.
None of Hemingway's. Even Shakespeare's stuff. Whenever it's been successful, the few times it's usually, for instance, Tame Things I Hate About You was based on Taming of the Shrew, but it wasn't Taming of the Shrew, and it's like that. A lot of Shakespearean-esque films, they may use that, like, kind of those themes and motifs, but by no means are, like, this isn't, like, the closest probably was Hamlet, Mel Gibson's portrayal of Hamlet, where it was a really successful movie, at least at the time, but I think that was, again, more so the main actor, the drive of Mel Gibson at the time. He was just an amazing actor, and it did relatively well, but I agree.
And even Kenneth Branagh's version is highly touted as being very good.
But yeah,
but even then, it's not.
Or
it's not standing on its own as a Best Picture candidate. Or
I would say, I would say typically that it is an anomaly. Bram Stoker's Dracula was, again, a movie that, movie based on the novel that did all right. But, again, for the most part, movies based on classic literature don't really do as well. And I think it comes down to people who have the mindset of the novel is so... It's within our mindset and our culture. We all have read it in high school, or we all know the general theme, that we have such high expectations that instead for movies based on books that are lesser known, maybe from like smaller books, like The Help, for instance, Help did amazing at the box office, but it was relatively a book not that many people had read beforehand. They may not have known beforehand, or... The Kite Runner, which is a really well book, but it's not an American classic that everybody has known. So it makes sense that the film does an amazing job, and some people, and that's really when those debates of movie versus book can really take hold, because then it comes down to, everybody obviously says the book, but classic American novels are really where it's like, no, the movie just really wasn't as good as the book.
And we do have some adaptations coming up this summer.
Yeah, we do.
One of which, right in line with what we're talking about, Joss Whedon's
Much Ado
About Nothing.
Oh, gosh, that'll be great. I mean,
that looks pretty good. It's mostly shot in black and white. There's spot color for certain objects.
Of course, and that's always interesting. That always lends itself to trying to understand why does the director... highlight this one or that thing. And Joss Whedon, as many of you, if you may not know, very famous, big in the whole sci-fi community. Obviously, he just did The Avengers, but he was with Buffy for very many years.
The creator.
Yeah. I mean, many other... escapes me at the moment. Yes, the sci-fi fans love him.
Firefly and
whatnot. Firefly, thank you.
Yes, and all his typical cast is in there, Nathan Fillion and the like. And part of the other buzz about it was that it was shot in a little under 2 weeks. My own speculation is that could partially have to do with shooting in black and white. That's not to say that you don't still have to light things a certain way. Of course you do, but... I would assume more difficult in color.
Yes, I think black and white, it's more about, you don't have to necessarily worry about shade or lighting, potentially.
Yeah, you do.
A little bit, but I'm going to go with Greg's answer. I'm going to defer to Greg, but yes. But that'll be very interesting because, again, it's going back, sometimes Shakespearean pieces and things like the Odyssey or Troy, for instance, a lot of those, it's very hard to garner a full audience, because a lot of times I don't want to deal with like the ancient language or like, you know, Shakespearean, and mm-hmm. and then it comes down to the director having to decide whether they want to do it in modern speak or they want to stay true to the source material. And
right.
Have you seen a trailer? I mean, I'm guessing you've seen. Do you know if Whedon is doing it in regular English, or is it going to be in Shakespearean?
It seemed like, for the most part, Elizabethan. Yeah,
Elizabethan.
Right.
Yeah. So. And a lot of times the directors will do that because it makes sense to kind of keep it to the source material. But it also understandably where it's going to turn some people off who just don't want to spend 2 hours trying to understand what's being said and done.
Right, and while we could see it in a wide release, it is mostly just coming to independent theaters. But still, one that I am looking forward to. Another one, this is one that I actually recently saw, and that was 42, the Jackie Robinson story. And that's sort of dwindling down now, its appearances in theaters. But that adapted on, of course, the true story of Jackie Robinson's integration into baseball.
The new actor, the actor who plays Jackie Robinson, has gotten a lot of praise for his role. I mean, kind of came out of nowhere, not you know, mm-hmm. big name actor, but has still held his own next to obviously acting legend Harrison Ford.
Yeah, and Harrison Ford was very good. I think that part of the problems that I had with the movie was just making Harrison Ford's character, Branch Rickey, the president of the Dodgers, seemed like he was just the sole drive behind his Jackie Robinson success. And I think that happens sometimes in films where there's really more of the
revisionist type of...
Yeah, and it's really unfortunately given to a white character the sort of strength that it took to overcome the racism when,
I think you would argue maybe that's a little bit more on Jackie Robinson's shoulders.
That's not to say that it didn't show him, you know, a struggle to overcome his problems, but I think it was Branch Rickey coming in with the solution a little bit too often than might have really occurred.
And actually, my question, again, many questions for Greg, because he kind of knows everything. Greg, I love him to death. He knows more about sports than I ever will. And I was going to ask if you knew, how does this film maybe fare with the history of the events? Maybe if you mm-hmm. could give some insight on how you felt. Did you feel it was historically accurate, as historically accurate as a film can be?
The ways in which it was accurate were really, really good. And I'll explain that.
As he giggles and laughs, yes.
Because is in a very personal way. And I say that because my grandfather and my father and uncle grew up in Brooklyn. And my grandfather and uncle saw Jackie Robinson play. And so my dad would tell me stories that he had heard from them about what he would do when he was out on the field and how he would be really driving the pitchers crazy by shuffling his feet as though he were going to steal and then usually successfully stealing the base, stealing home as much as he did, which is very uncommon now. And so the sort of touches that they brought to it were confirming sort of stories that were passed down in my family. Wow. So I thought that was really cool to see. As far as the other just historical touches more broadly that were present, as far as I know, it stuck true to what at the very least, the sequential events were. This isn't to make his achievements seem any lesser, but there were black ball players before him, not in the previous 40 years, but sometimes he's called the first black ball player, but he wasn't. That's sort of splitting hairs at this point.
But it's like, no, but I understand that. They're still all very valid points and still important things to note, but I think overall it seems...
It was seemingly very accurate, and I was able to see it sitting in between my dad and my uncle who was visiting, so it was very meaningful, and besides just some of the smaller things that I thought could have been improved, it started a little clunkily, starting a little bit more like a documentary than a film. But that aside, like, it really was a strong film, and I would put that in that sort of same category as Gatsby, where if you're thinking of going, you should go, but I'm not
forcing you, I'm not telling you,
divert
you,
you from seeing something else you're interested in. But if you're on the fence, I say hop over that fence. You know what I mean?
I gotcha.
What else are you interested in this summer?
Well, there's one movie that I'm interested in, I am nervous about, but I'm really hoping for the best, keeping my fingers crossed, and that is Man of Steel. Man of Steel is the new Superman movie that's coming out. I've seen the trailers. I'm very excited about it, but, I think that the stress comes down to the history of the franchise. Unfortunately, over the last few years, the Christopher Reeve era, has not been doing well. There have been a lot of difficulties in studio kind of getting this written and done, kind of relating back to our previous conversation. Kevin Smith has talked about in length about his trying to work on the Superman films in his An Evening with Kevin Smith. If you want to search it out, you could probably find it on YouTube. He's talked about his trying to hand in that, and then how Tim Burton got the script and tried work, you know, kind of directed it and did his own rewrites to it, and then obviously leading to what came out a few years ago. Many saw it as a flop. Many didn't see it as really as kind of living up to its potential. And now, kind of in the backdrop of, you know, comparing, you know, again, maybe you don't want to compare the two brands, but DC versus Marvel, DC has had made three amazing, well, not even three, I'm talking recent history, but amazing films with Batman, but really that's it. No other character has really had a very successful film launch. Justice League has been been pushed for many years, and that was supposed to come out, you know, around this time, but that keeps on getting pushed and whatnot, always in developmental hell. But looking at Marvel, if you want to compare the two, you've had Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, you've had...
Even Ghost Rider.
Green Lantern.
That was DC.
But Green Hornet was... Are they the same?
Green Hornet, or I don't think it's either. Because that was like a radio serial.
Okay.
Is how that got started.
Oh, okay, I was trying to say. But not only that, X-Men, you know, so there have been, and you can argue that some of them have been obviously better than others, but there's Ghost Rider 2, for instance, coming out, and, you know,
It already came out? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, there's newer stories, just tangent time, where Marvel is getting some of their own franchises back. So they just got Ghost Rider back.
Okay.
So it's been in the news. And then I think they just got Fantastic Four back, and they're looking to reboot that as well.
Very cool. I was saying, quantity versus quality is always going to be the debate. I mean, some people will argue, and rightfully so, that I'd rather have three solid Batman films than 10, Marvel films. But as we've seen with Avengers and the recent hits with Marvel, it's that isn't necessarily the case anymore. Marvel's been coming out with the last few films really solid. Iron Man 3, Avengers, Thor, you know, really good films that people have enjoyed. So it's not even about quantity anymore. It's mixing the two, coming out with developmental plans, sticking to their deadlines, and really giving fans a comeback and really building that following of like, okay, I want to see the next film because I want to see how it relates to the previous films and future films.
Right, and having this plan where all the films are in the same world and there's a timeline to not just a trilogy, but 10 different films that happen in a certain sequence with the way that Iron Man 3 takes place after the Avengers and the next Thor and Captain America movies will also take into account that
and
the events of the Avengers.
Of course, and I think that that's really what builds cross-promotion, cross-branding, and really, not only in an economic sense, it makes sense, but it gives the comic book junkies and the fans really something to kind of rally around and really, you know, get excited about. And unfortunately, DC hasn't been as successful in doing this because they've really been more so focusing on as if one hero at a time to make sure that they do it really well.
Right. And even DC is trying to take this Marvel idea of planning out how these films will sort of have a similar voice and a similar tone. And Christopher Nolan is one of the producers of Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
So they seemingly want to get that to be their sort of voice and vision in what he's brought to Batman in being a little bit grittier. And maybe that's the difference that they want versus Marvel. Marvel has taken
more
of a lighthearted. I mean,
but I feel like that's
not in a silly way, but they've really integrated humor in a smart way and have done a number of cheeky things, whether it's Stan Lee, Marvel's founder, being in just about every
single
movie,
having a little cameo.
Yeah.
But I think in that somewhat separates the two right at the moment. I think, I could be wrong about this. It just seems, me just going off from the films, that's just a difference between the two companies as a whole. You know, Marvel, their characters, and I feel like, the way that they've been presenting the brand and the films, it has been more lighthearted, and at least for a long time, they wanted to make it family friendly for everybody, which was generally how superhero films were taken back in the past. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we go back to the whole starting from the Adam Westian Batmans, and then moving more towards Joker, Mr. Freeze, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know. There was always at least trying to make it marketable to all types of people and children as well as adults. And while at the past it's failed, obviously, with Batman Forever, Marvel has at least at the time found a great way to make it not only fun and family friendly, but also still serious at times and really acceptable for everyone. Whereas DC has more so, I would definitely, I can understand parents not wanting to take their kids to the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
But still, stylistically, it's a choice that was successful. It was a really successful choice, and it showed. I think it did make an important statement that superhero movies, comic movies, can be serious, can be adult, can be nitty gritty, and still can be really wonderful. Without having to seem full of itself or coming off as schlocky. So I'm hoping, kind of getting back to Man of Steel, I'm really hoping that because so much time has been taken and so much anticipation, and which can be the killer when there's so much anticipation involved, really hope it turns out well. And I hope that it leads to further development. Hopefully it leads to more of a real working of the Justice League movies, and really kind of be wonderful to see
Aquaman
or Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's been talked about a lot.
They have been talked about. And hey, you know, obviously I think every fanboy's dream is that there is a Avengers versus Justice League maybe 20 years from now.
Right.
I highly doubt it, but you know, you can let the, you can we can let we can all dream, can't we?
You may.
So yes, that was me and Greg's discussion on summer movies. There are a lot of things coming out. I don't know if we mentioned it last week. Definitely didn't mention here, but the new Star Trek has come out, Into the Darkness, and that's been getting a lot of good reviews. A lot of people are interested in that, and I think the biggest thing is that, you know, summer movies are summer is always the best time for movies. So if you get a chance, definitely go out to the movies. Definitely go out and whether it's a superhero movie or an autobiographical flick or a movie based on amazing literature, although the track record isn't the best, definitely go out. There's a lot of stuff out there for people and a lot of things to be enjoyed. So we're going to have one final musical break, and then we're going to end off the show with a little bit of information on Fringe. So thank you, folks, and 1 second, we'll be right back. That was Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, Oh What a Night. And now we're about to end off the show. Almost done. Hopefully you've enjoyed today's episode. But really quick, I wanted to talk about, again, community event that's going on that's very well known within the Orlando area, definitely within the theater community, and that's the Orlando Fringe Festival. It started May 15th. It's going on till May 28th. If you don't want to know what the Orlando International Fringe Theater Festival is, the full title, it is a week, 2 week long, about, my math is a little wonky, a 2 week long festival of all things theater, local shows, a lot of really talented people and troops in the community kind of coming together, putting on really amazing shows, really interesting shows. If you enjoy theater, if that's something you love and you can't get enough of it, Fringe Festival is amazing, not only because of the really talented people, but it really just brings the community together. And there's a lot of community partnership, and it's a really great way. It's a really one of the true gems of the area of Orlando, and it comes once a year, and definitely it's something to consider if you're interested in theater, if you're interested in stuff like that. And if you're interested in theater, definitely check it out. I'm trying to go this year, trying to make some time to. I went last year, and I had a ton of fun. There's just a lot of shows for all types of people, for people who like really serious, interesting theater, for those who are into celebrity stuff. They have a celebrity dating show. I know last year they had Hollywood Squares. I know that they're doing something different this year on with celebrities impersonators. There's a few mature things as well for those who have, mature tastes and whatnot. But also on the other hand, they have something called Kids Fringe, which also has a lot of family-friendly kid shows to get kids interested into theater, which is always great to get, children interested in the performing arts. So yeah, there's a lot of things going on with the Fringe. It's definitely one of the biggest community events that go on. So I definitely just wanted to bring that out before the show ended. I definitely talk about that and just emphasize a local community thing, a local community event that's going on. Definitely check it out if you have the chance. It's going on again till May 28th. All the information's on the OrlandoFringe.org, from locations, which will be many, many venues, but that general the Orlando rep, Shakes Theater area, Lock Haven Park. So definitely check it out if you have the chance. I highly consider it, definitely, because I'm thinking about going as well. So we are nearing the end of the show. Well, pretty much the end of the show. Next week, it'll be me as well, kind of going and talking about more interesting and fun little segments. We had promoted this last week. We were going to do it this week, but decided to push it to next week. Definitely, we're going to be talking about summer at Rollins. What is there to do at Rollins? How is Rollins during the summer and, college campus when majority of the students aren't here? There's a lot of really interesting tidbits to talk about there, and it's a lot. It's another recorded segment with Greg, so definitely you'll be able to hear his bright and shiny voice. So he won't be too gone. You won't miss him too much. As always, if you we've actually just recorded put in our archives on the Sanspur website. Most of the descriptions of the episodes are on there and will be on there within the next few weeks. So if you would like to go back and listen to this or any other Sanspur Hour, do it. Now you can do it. If you just go to the Sanspur website, www.thesanspur.org, then go to our media tab, or our media button, and if you go hold the mouse over the media, go down to podcasts, that's where you can get all the Sanspur Hours that we've done. I think there may be a few that we weren't able to record or had recording issues and weren't able to put up, but definitely check it out if you want to listen to my voice and Greg's voice again talking about all the wonderful things. So again, this is Amir Sadeh. Thank you so much for your time. This has been the Sands for Hour. See you next week.